Welcome to episode 313 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where pimp stands for pimp. So it stands for permaculture is my passion. It doesn't stand for pimp. In a way, it kind of does. But anyway, my man Eric Sider's on with me tonight. And when I saw him over there busting a move, it kind of threw me off a little bit. So didn't expect that and didn't see it coming. So, you know, the guy that gives all that wonderful sage advice every single show that we have here, for the most part, he's going to be on with us tonight. We're going to be talking about something that's really, really, really dear to everybody's heart out there, especially today when times are a little bit tough. But this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Living Soil Foundation. Folks, got some really good news. Dr. Will got a hold of me, and it looks like the scalar testing shows that we have crossed the finish line regarding or at least this site in Western North Carolina. And we've been using a combination of the stuff we make here in terms of our compost teas, and also a combination of what Dr. Will has used and what he sells. We'll get into that later, but I would just want to let you know, folks, it's all your donations that made this possible. Now we're to the point where we are ready to call in the engineers. We're going to send off a sample to Mike Adams, the health ranger. He agreed to test this for us. And folks, if the results come back the way I'm pretty sure they're going to come back, then we will have a decentralized way of cleaning up toxic messes that the world doesn't want you to know about. So I'm really excited about that. And I want to once again thank everybody for that. Okay, before we get into it, I want to remind you, remember, Harvest Right has a sale going on right now. You get an additional $100 off to whatever they have going right now. Perma Pastures 100 will get you. That's obviously your code to put in. Wave Watch, you know this thing I got on my wrist right here? Yes. Billy 100 will get you $100 off of that. Redemption Shield, look, y'all, every single show I'm G'd up from the feet up, and I mean grounded. At all times. In fact, I'm working on ways to stay grounded 100% outside. If you'll notice, I'm a couple of shades darker than ordinarily I would be. Don't worry. I'll cover that later because my vitamin D is off the charts right now, and I'm going to keep that going. And I can do it even better if I manage to stay grounded the whole time. But, you know, when you're working on the front, you don't know if some crackhead threw needles up on the property or what. So I'm trying to find ways to get around a lot of that. Anyway, Redemption Shield, 10% off with promo code PERMA. EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. And then I want to remind you, this weekend coming up, William's also going to be at some place. I think Eric's got a little something coming up, too. We're going to talk about that. But Mountain Readiness, that's going to be in Harmony, North Carolina. I'm going to be there showing you how to do a tactical food forest class. Seemed to be a big hit last time, and I'm going back to do a repeat performance. And really looking forward to that, folks. Go get your tickets. A lot of awesome people over there. Pat Miletich, former UFC world champions, trained more world champions than anybody else. He's going to be there along with Dr. Will. He's going to show you how to choke down some fool when they're trying to lift your purse or pocketbook or wallet, whatever the case may be. So with that said, look, we're going to have I almost said something I knew I was going to regret, but there's going to be three of us on tonight. And that's William, Eric, and myself. So how are you doing, Eric?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for being on. William, how you doing, bro?
Pretty good. Yeah, the event that I'm doing next week is the Midwest Preparedness Conference, by the way. We're going to do like a compost demonstration and then also processing a sheep on the homestead and hopefully eating that sheep too. But yeah, that's what's going on here.
Man, you're going to be wore out. I don't know how you intend to process a sheep and you're going to make compost out of him all at one event.
We're going to process the sheep one day, and then the next day we're going to compost the organs and all that stuff. Whatever we don't eat is basically going to get composted.
Well, stay tuned for that potluck, bro. You're going to have some interesting stuff. Hey, maybe it won't be one of them potlucks where somebody throws a sack of weed on the table as their contribution to the potluck. So,
it's Lawrence, Kansas, that it probably will happen.
Ain't no telling. Oh, so, hey, we're going to talk about farm news, but, hey, I'm going to go to the guest right off. Eric, what's new in your world, my man?
Just trying to keep everything, keep the hamster wheel spinning at a reasonable rate, I guess you could say. Too much, not enough time, but just as Bill and Jeff said, perseverance is the number one trait you got to have to do anything in this world.
Man, ain't that the truth? How's everything going at the homestead? I mean, you know, I know you had a chicken that needed a little bit of attention, but are you still running the chicken tractor on steroids out there?
Yeah. So the latest update, I was using two full straw bales to do the two cubic yards of compost with 11 birds, and exclusively that, just the chicken manure built up over 2 months and two straw bales, and it was losing 50% volume.
Wow.
And wow. I was like, so there's all these wood chips around, so I started hauling storage bins of wood chips back and forth, and now I'm using exclusively wood chips and 11 birds worth of manure, and within a week it was already up to 140 degrees.
Wow.
So I don't know. So I got an oversupply of biology, apparently.
Well, are you still doing YouTube videos and stuff like that? Because I'm sure there's a number of people right now. I haven't even watched my own videos as of late. I'm dead serious. I mean, this time of year, I'm just covered up like nobody's business. So I haven't had a chance to look. Are you doing updates on that still?
Unfortunately, that's probably the biggest casualty of my current schedule, is not being able to just have the time to film anything I'm doing. Usually it's just trying to have the time to do the things, let alone film it and upload it. So I give William lots of respect there for keeping his channel going. But I actually got a notice from YouTube telling me I was going to lose monetization if I didn't upload something. So that tells you how long it's been.
I didn't even know that could happen.
I wish it would, because right now, you know, there are so many people that, whether it be the tariffs that are going on, whether it be this or whether it be that, people losing their jobs, whatever the case may be, people are needing solutions in a big kind of way. And yours, I think, the way you're doing it, folks, here's the cool thing about all of us being here. We've all done or are doing the chicken tractor on steroids, but with different caveats and different methodologies going behind it. And in every case, they all work. But Eric's, I think yours probably touches more people in the fact that more people live in residential places. So they're thinking, okay, when they see me do it, they think, oh, they got to have 100 acres and be able to do all this and that. And that's not the case. I mean, you can scale this thing up and down. And, you know, I found some ideal numbers that work for me. But, you know, what works for you? How many birds do you have in that system?
Right now I have... Actually, I'm down to 9 birds. I actually had a couple weird casualties, but they're all in 200 square feet. It's just one of those cheap all-in-one pens you can get on online or Amazon. It's definitely not the best thing to use, and it's got some limitations that I would like to fix. But yeah, it's been going on almost 3 years now, and it's just been pumping out 2 cubic yards of high-quality compost every 2 months. To the point where sometimes I'm just throwing it around because I don't know what to do with it all.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've tested it, so you know how good it is.
And by the way, I think we did talk about it on the PimpCast, y'all. We did test Eric's compost. We looked at it, and I'll put it this way, to give you a basis of understanding of how good it is, the minimum standards for biocomplete compost, according to Lane Ningham, is 135 micrograms per gram. Eric's was on, I don't recall what the numbers were, but it exceeded that by maybe 10 times.
I think it was around 800 something.
Yeah, okay. So about eight times.
Yeah. And then the protozoas or had was like over a million. I think the minimum was like 10,000 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's so folks, these things, what the numbers he's talking about here, there are minimum standards, and Eric is producing stuff that people would kill to be able to do. And so this is why, you know, he's so valuable and such a great asset to this show. And we can't thank him enough. So son, let me go over, let me hit on Lola. Let me hit you up right quick. What's going on in your world?
Today I'm just kind of taking care of, I'm farm sitting for a lady I recently did a consultation with. She had to go out of town last minute. So, and she's about an hour and a half away. So that was a big chunk of today. But, other than that, just trying, like, Eric, you were mentioning like being able to put out YouTube videos and stuff. The videos I've been putting out lately take a lot of freaking time to plan for, research for, just develop, get an actual outline for, and all that stuff. And then there's the whole editing part as well. So that's been taking up a lot of time lately. And then just conducting soil tests as well, because I've opened that up so where people can send in soil tests, and then just getting ready for Midwest preparedness. We'll be out there camping for about a week, which if it was just me and my wife, that's, you know, that's easy enough, basically to a tent, and then we can figure out everything else. But doing it with a year and a half old baby is going to be a little bit interesting. So it's going to be me, my wife, and my baby. So we're trying to plan for that and make sure we have everything before we get out there. Just because the place we're going to be camping for Midwest Preparedness Conference is not necessarily right next to town. So it's like a, what, 2-hour round trip if I were to go to town to try to pick up something? No? Is it shorter than that?
Nah, about an hour and a half, somewhere around there. It's a little bit off the beaten path, but you got a lot of support systems out there. It's a really awesome festival, folks. If you haven't been to Midwest, if you're in the region anywhere around the Kansas area or Lawrence, Kansas, man, I'm telling you, that is one incredible group of people over there. You're going to be glad you went. So I guess I'll kick it on over to me. So things have been going at 100 miles an hour around here. Folks, I'm doing the best I can. I can't keep up with the bone sauce demands right now. And, you know, we're solid on the comfrey department, but bone sauce, I got to have everything right. I'm not going to sell junk. So I know folks are emailing and saying, hey, man, look, I need this stuff now. But folks, I cannot make it if the weather does not permit. And I'm not going to put out junk. If my name's on it, believe me, I'm going to do the best I can to make it the best it can be. So I'm working on that. And then other things we have going on. Yesterday was we put our last extraction out on the test project we're working on right alongside the river. In fact, it was of all the test places we did, this was the place where the nuclear radiation, for crying out loud, came up. And I'm reluctant to say it until we get all of the tests in, but I kid you not, we had three different tests go on in this region, in this spot. Two of those three showed nuclear radiation. And of course, all the locals around here couldn't care less. I mean, for the most part, not all of them, but there's a fair number of them. And that's just one of many things that was going on in this place. But anyway, we were out there the other day, and it looks like things are starting to bounce back. So I couldn't be more happy about that. And then, of course, spent a fair amount of time yesterday. A friend of mine who just happens to be moving, leaving to Florida. And by the way, the reason they're leaving is chief among them is in this area. When COVID happened, it went from, let's say, Asheville was a 10. It dropped from 10 to a 5. After the hurricane happened, it dropped from a 5 to about a 2. And they are so upset about daily being sprayed. In fact, Juby Joe says, best short you ever did, Billy growing organic, but getting sprayed. That's exactly why they're moving. So these people are trying to move from here to a place where the chemtrailing, which I hate to tell them this, but Florida's getting hit as bad as anybody. The only person, only place getting hit worse than Florida is Michigan. And they're spraying everywhere, all over, in fact, everywhere from Texas north. And I've also said before, I think there might be a correlation between the Deagle report and a correlation between all these places that are most heavily sprayed. So if somebody wants to go out there and do the research on that, look, you could probably bust it wide open. I don't have the bandwidth to do it. But anyway, these folks have a bunch of chickens out there, and they've been collecting chicken poop forever and a day. So you might be a homesteader or permaculture designer when somebody calls you up and says, hey, man, you want all this poop? And you excitedly respond, absolutely. So I got enough basically chicken poop from these folks to supply. I've been getting a lot of it from Ben and Denise over at Renewed Homestead, which, by the way, give them a thumbs up over there, y'all, because they're handling the chat. Anyway, I usually get it from them, but man, it looks like I'm well stocked for quite a while. So a lot of other things going on out there. And I want to thank, by the way, want to thank everybody coming in the chat tonight. If you would hit that thumbs up and get a squirt away. Anyway, we're going to jump right into it. I'm not going to go through the things I ordinarily do. I wanted to take the housekeeping out right up front because there's a whole lot going on. Eric, right off the bat, we'll circle back to it. But right off the bat, before I get into the main topic of it, and I made a list of like 10 things in terms of how to build community, but nobody out of the three of us here, you're without a doubt the best at it. And I made a list of 10 things and thought maybe we might discuss. But before we get going, I see a little banner behind you. It says Permaculture Fair Oaks. Why don't you talk about what's going on there, bro? I know you got a fundraiser going, right?
Yeah, so that's my nonprofit permaculture community group. It's, if you're familiar with chapter 14 in the designer's manual, it's kind of like the precursor to the bioregional organization. So every local government area, whatever the smallest local government area in your state or county would be, you can you could have a permaculture community group. And it's basically, the main idea is just to gather people together, talk about permaculture, focus on education and demonstration, and you get enough people together, the politicians start paying attention, and you can start affecting laws in a casual way. But mostly it's just to evangelize the amazing design science of permaculture and how we can solve all our problems, like Jeff says, in a garden. And really what he means is a food forest garden. So we have our first project is a community food forest. And we have a fundraiser this Saturday, May 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. So anyone in the Sacramento area, or if you have money to spare, which I know most people don't, but we'd be more than happy to accept your money or just share it around and just get more people excited that these things are happening. And the only reason it's happening is because I just decided to do it and had a lot of good friends and help. And you know, it's not going to happen by itself, and it's certainly not going to happen because some politician decided to do something. So it's on us. And like you say, get loose or get lost.
Bam. Bam. That's what I'm talking about. But I see, you know, you've done, I was looking at your banner, the banner you have behind you. I was checking it out online, and it sounds like, man, you've really made this something of a party with a purpose. It seems like it's not just, hey, show up and we're just going to have a meeting, but you guys got a band, and what else you got going on around there?
Yeah, so one of our directors, her partner, is involved with a local radio station. So they're going to be live broadcasting, you know, like old school terrestrial radio, and they're going to be broadcasting live, and they'll be DJing. And yeah, it's really just, usually our meetings are on Wednesday evening, so not everybody can come out if they got weeknight commitments or kids. So primarily it's just another reason to get together, and you know, if we can raise some money, cool. If not, mostly it's just to raise awareness and get people excited. Like, we have, there's a really awesome organization in the town over from me, and it's Orangevale, California, and they do a thing every year called the Big Day of Service. So they get all just different kinds of community projects up and running, and they find sponsors, and so every project can get up to around $500 to on whatever they need. And a lot of them are like, you know, cleanup jobs or beautification or maybe some repairs or painting. And so this year they got up to 70 projects, and it all happens on one day. And wow. So we decided that just everything kind of worked out this way, so we decided to make our project a big day of service project. And they opened it up on April 15th, tax day, funny enough. But ours, I think, filled up. We had about 20 spots for volunteers. It filled up in a couple days. And so far, ours is still the only project that's completely full. So wow. It just shows, and it's not only just, you know, our members. So it's definitely people get, every time I talk about it, they get excited about it and they're like, this is amazing. Like they all want it. So we're hoping to just basically create a model that we can just start dropping these in place. But obviously you can go a lot faster with the more funds and resources you have.
If people wanted to donate, where could they go to donate? Just the website, permaculturefairoaks.org?
Yeah, that'll, okay. There's a link there. You can, and that'll link to the actual fundraiser page. And then there's, links for if you want to fundraise or if you want to send us some money or, yeah.
Well, bro, okay. I'll put my money where my mouth is. Hang on a sec. Hey, Michelle, send Eric some money through that permaculture tent thing he's got going. Yeah, so well, we're going to be the first ones donating because you're folks, what you don't know about Eric is he is one of the most selfless human beings I've ever met in my life. I mean, he's one of those rare people that does things without thought of reward, and he does it just because he's a good man. Now, he'll never tell you this stuff, but I'm going to tell you, and he is extraordinary, and I feel lucky to call him my friend. So, yeah, folks, break bread because he won't fake dead. So, and honestly, this project, I mean, I'm sure if Eric's involved, it's definitely worth it. And the money's going to go to a fantastic thing. So you better believe, Permapastures Farm is going to be breaking bread right now. So, I'm sure Michelle's getting on a computer as soon as she's done getting mad at me for yelling at her because she's probably just trying to keep her awake right now. She was falling asleep on me last night. So anyway, I think it's a fantastic thing. And I looked at the website and I was like, I wish I was in closer proximity. Wish I could even fly out for something like that, man. It just sounds, but Eric, I couldn't help but think when I saw what you were doing there. Now I'm going to swing this thing back around. We'll swing back to what you're doing here closer to the end, but I couldn't help but notice when I saw your project, I talked to Michelle about this very thing yesterday. William can attest to what I'm about to say, and probably a lot of people in the chat. It's been, I don't even know how many months removed from that hurricane that came through Western North Carolina. William, last time you came through Asheville, which was not that long ago, what did it look like to you in the surroundings?
The same. It looked exactly the same. Like there's still houses that are halfway just destroyed. You can see into people's houses because the whole front is just taken down. There's still roads and bridges that aren't being repaired. But what's funny is that you go right across the state line over in Tennessee, especially Irwin, you can see Tennessee Department of Transportation everywhere working on stuff. But as soon as you go over to North Carolina, it's like they're not even there. They're in some places, like you can see Department of Transportation working in some places, but largely everything looks the same. Everything looks exactly the same as it did the day after the hurricane.
Okay, so the point I'm making here right now is that if you go alongside that river, the closer you get to Asheville, there is debris, trash everywhere. You have a whole army of would-be volunteers around here that would be willing to put foot to butt if the mayor of that town and all the other towns said, hey, we're going to have a big community project, kind of like Eric Sider's doing out there in California. We're going to make it a big party. I'm sure we can get some bands. We'll have food trucks, the whole nine yards. We're going to go out here, and we could probably get thousands of people to show up all at the same time to do, because that's exactly what I thought of when I saw your project and what you're doing out there. I was like, how hard would it be to get an army of people to come out here a couple of weekends? I mean, let's say they could have done this every single weekend and had a ton of volunteers out there, but it could be a monthly thing. Go out here, look, we're going to beautify this place, and still nothing is done because, like you said, you're waiting on government. It's never going to happen. But Eric, I gotta ask this because it's been said in the chat, and folks, I see some of you have had questions. We'll come to those in a minute. Somebody's asking, donate for what purpose? What is the project?
It's a community food forest. So it's going to be a food forest demonstration, and the lot it's on, which is, the lot's got a whole history of itself, but it's on a ridiculously busy intersection that gets 25,000 impressions a day one way.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this would be the best way of demonstrating permaculture right there, since people can't help but see it.
Right. And since, so we're obviously we're planting, you know, it's going to be going into May, the not less than ideal time to be planting trees and everything. So we're going to do a kind of restrictive planting just to get started, you know, enough to make it look like something. So it's about 2,800 square feet is the area we're starting with. And I'm going to plant about 20 trees and probably a berry bush for each tree and a couple other supporting species. But really, we're gearing up so that come fall, we can, you know, we have a whole nother probably 3,000 to 4,000 square feet on the other side that we can expand to. So that's really, really what we're trying to gear up to, is just make this thing something that people get excited about. And then come fall, we can, you know, really slam it in and really make it something special. So.
Cool. We'll come back to that here in a minute. Now, I got a list of some things as far as building community, because that seems essentially what is unfolding right now. And so many people feel every single time we have a little gathering, Ben and Denise put on a gathering, they've been trying to do it monthly. This time of year, it might be, you know, every other month or something like that. And what you find out whenever you put these, I'm just wondering if this is how it unfolds in your area, Eric, where the people are so starved to find other people that are interested in this sort of thing that when they do get in that crowd, they just feel like, good night, man. I don't ever want to leave. I mean, where have these people been my whole life? Is that what's happening there?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the essence of the community group, is just finding like-minded people and most importantly, meeting in person, you know, because there's only so much you can do online. And it's just, there's just a transfer of energy that just only happens when you're standing right next to somebody. And I think that's also, I think you can disagree on a lot of, you know, trivial things that we like to think are important things, but we can all understand that we're all human and we're all having a human experience, and let's get together and feed ourselves first. And then, you know, once we're feeding ourselves, then we can debate on all these other issues that people love to focus on. But online, it's just, it's like the most extreme, ridiculous reactions, and there's nothing sensible happening most of the time. So I think that's why it's even more important right now to meet in person and, you know, understand we're all human beings living on this planet, and we all need each other to fix the mess we're finding ourselves in.
I couldn't agree more, man. When every single time, it's such an impersonal thing. I know during COVID and everything, it got pretty popular for everybody to do everything online, and it just kind of made me sick to a certain extent. At least
I hate it.
Yeah,
I hate it.
We're still doing it, and I hate doing it that way. It's so impersonal. You're you know, when you're doing everything online, well, you're covered in blue light when you could be in red light, sunlight, you know, real light. And then this whole thing about communicating through that medium just feels so impersonal. I mean, I remember hearing Dr. Jack Cruz a little while ago talking about, I was listening to a podcast when I was out working, and he was saying that, you know, they have measurements. They can measure your heart. The person next to you can feel from up to like 21 feet away. They know that your heart resonates out that far. Now, look, I'm not trying to get woo-woo on everybody here, but the point being is that when you have these great intentions, you can't convey, you can say some nice words over the internet, but honestly, you can't convey what it feels like to be there in person. It's like trying to tell somebody what the Sistine Chapel smells like. You know, I mean, you can't convey it unless you're actually there. So I'm glad to see that you're breaking out of that shell. So let's talk about some of these things. So number one on the list was host regular work parties or perma blitzes. I mean, that's essentially what you're doing. So we'll skip over that one. Well, number two, you've already covered too. Start a community garden or a food forest. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, son?
Yeah, like a lot of the issues that I see with the communities and when they're like being established, and a lot of the fail points that I see with communities is divvying up the harvest, because everybody shows up. Not everybody shows up necessarily for the work part, but or at least consistently, but everybody shows up consistently for the harvest part, like when it's time to divvy up the food and all that stuff. And I've seen like communities fail because of that. The people who are doing all the work, you know, get bitter and sour about the people who didn't do any of the work but want to show up and get the same share of food and stuff. So that's something to just keep in mind, that, you know,
how would you
that's going to happen.
How would you deal with that kind of conflict, Eric? That's a pretty good point. I mean, and William can relate to this because one of our earlier projects was with family, and it was like the middle of a Snoop Dogg song. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got the cups, but they ain't chipped in. And that's how it was with my family. You know, didn't want to help when it came to all the other stuff. But when harvest rolled around, oh, here we go. Let's fill all the negative black stereotypes.
Well, for our this project we're doing right now, largely it's whatever we produce is going to the local food bank. And, you know, I would say maybe there's some thing where you could say if you don't put in a certain amount of appearances, then you don't get to show up for, you know, I'd probably have to quantify it something like that if that was really an issue in your group. Is like if you've only shown up on harvest day, you don't get to show up on harvest day kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm
just another note on the another amazing thing about this area I'm in is there the food bank actually has a farm connected to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, but sadly, one of our directors, she lives right near the food bank, and she was driving in the other day, and she said there's like a line of cars out the parking lot of people waiting to get food. So it's just, it just shows you how sick our society is that we have multiple billionaires and lines out the parking lot for food banks, you know, like the distribution of resources is just so out of whack.
I can completely relate. Over here in this part of Texas, there's a church that I've tried for years. And prior, before when we lived in Texas, I tried to partner up with this church before because they run a little local food bank where they feed like anybody in the community that, you know, needs food and stuff. You'll see a whole line going out of the parking lot full of brand new vehicles that are, but people waiting to get food because they can't afford food. But I've been trying to partner up with this church to, you know, grow food for the food bank, and whether it was like produce, vegetables, fruit, meat, stuff like that, provide as much as they could with the food bank. And constantly their response is like either they don't want gardens or an orchard or animals that close to the church, even though they have like whole 12 acres behind them that they're doing nothing with. They just lease it out to people who are haying. Or
wow,
the response is like, well, why? We can just go to Walmart. Like we can use money from the tithes to just get stuff, like people donate to the food bank. So yeah, that's an example of the sick society we live in.
Good night. So yeah. Eric, do you have any, I'm just floored that, you know, we have all this money to sit here and send overseas, billions and billions and billions to send for warfare, but we still got people in food banks out here. I mean, do you have this phenomenon out there where you're seeing people pulling up in Lexus and Cadillacs and all this other stuff to the food bank, or is it people that are legitimately, you know, really in need?
I mean, I'm sure it's a bit of both, but they might need the food bank because they're driving around in a Lexus. They can't afford that car either. But I think to William's point, like, I've always thought that if you get a property tax exemption, you should be required to have a community garden. So like schools, churches, like they have an immense amount of property and mostly doing absolutely nothing with it. So
yeah. Yeah, we've run into the same thing. I'm trying to work with a local college, or I was for a while. They're trying to work with one of the local colleges over here, and I'm looking at all the spare ground that they have over here and realize I could feed half of this town if I were able to put in food forest, orchard, I mean, you name it. I mean, it could all happen right there. And it's always dealing with this bureaucratic resistance from some hooplehead in the office somewhere who's never left that desk. It's land that is pretty much as fallow as you can get. But it just blows my mind. And William's right, because we even, William, I don't know if you remember it or not, but I remember hitting up the pastor at that one woke church we used to go to locally. Yep. And they had another, I think, a 20 acres back there in the mountains doing nothing, just junk trees, not junk trees, but basically trees. It was a place nobody even looked after. And I was like, you know what? I can clean that whole area up with some pigs and, you know, thin the trees out and really turn it into a glen or maybe some kind of silver pasture that's worthwhile. And I remember the pastor telling me, you know, hey man, I don't know if that's going to fly here because, you know, every time we've worked a food bank around here, He said, you know, the homeless guys will walk in and say, hey, can you take some of them peas off my plate or something? Or, and I'm like, oh, I think everybody's missing the point here. I mean, would you rather shop at Walmart or would you rather eat some stuff? I mean, like, just a prime example of what I'm talking about. I picked some, well, actually, your mom picked up some lettuce a little bit earlier from the greenhouse. And you got a very narrow band of time to eat this stuff before it starts getting all limp on you, you know? I mean, there's butter crunch and the romaine out there. It's not like this store-bought stuff that they shot it up with everything you don't want to eat. You have, the clock is ticking on real food. And people would rather eat this stuff at Walmart. It's just mind-boggling to me, man.
Now, Prep to Protect just said, as a pastor, I'll tell you that the church property is for the church and not for the community. In which I would respond, what is the church for? Is the church not for the community, or is the church there for the church purposes? Like, even if you're not growing that food for donation or anything like that, if there's anybody in your church that knows how to grow food, get them on that property to start growing food, if nothing else, for the congregation. It's probably, for some people, it's the only access to nutrient-dense food that they're going to have. And as you've told me before, Eric, the most, like, superfood you can buy, the most superfood you can buy or you can get access to is the food that you grow on your own property. That's the most nutrient-dense, super localized food for your nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, I know for, I mean, just the fact that you're in the community, physically, you're part of the community. And I know as part of the 501c3 classification to be a tax-deductible nonprofit, you have to do charitable things. So I don't know how you can justify not paying property tax and saying, well, this is just for the church, you know? Just my personal opinion right there.
Why? But you could also make it where people just want to see what green grass that you're going to have to spray a bunch of nonsensical chemicals on it. How cool would it be if you had a church? Because there is one in Asheville, and it's a really, I mean, boy, they have some serious gardening going on at this church. And it's for anybody that wants to go by and pick it up. I mean, I don't know how it's grown, but it looks like it's pretty impressive what they got going. Anyway, how cool would it be for the people? Okay, so why not make it an orchard? I mean, you could have a cover. I mean, literally for church functions, you could make it a permaculture orchard where you have layers and you could do so many wonderful things out there. Still have the grass that everybody seems to want to covet, which makes no sense to me. I mean, if you knew the history of lawns and where they even came from, folks, you'd rethink the whole need or want for having one. But I mean, you could turn this thing into a beautiful orchard, a food forest. I mean, you could run some animals out there, the whole nine yards. So the sky is the limit. So I would ask people to just think a little bit widely on some of this stuff. Let me go to the next one on this list. Offer, and I think this is going to be part of what you're doing at your event coming up, Eric, and that's offer workshops and skill sharing events. Is some of that going to be happening at this?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly going to be, you know, kind of talking and socializing, not so much getting into the dirt, but leading up to the big day of service, actual project, we're having lots of little work parties. So, because we have, I didn't even get to the exciting part about we're using these in-ground knit fabric pots from Dr. Carl Whitcomb.
Oh, cool.
Because, well, originally this, a little history on the project is it started as just a basic beautification and like a art mural, art wall project that my friend was doing because it's private property, but he was friends with the owners and it's always been this kind of blighted part of the community that everyone's like, what's going to happen with this lot? Is anyone going to do anything with this lot? And they've been trying to sell it for like 10 years. And even though it's on a ridiculously busy intersection, it's just very awkward from a traffic standpoint. Like anything that would require cars pulling in and out of this lot would basically just create accidents and traffic chaos. So I don't think the county would really approve anything in that standpoint. So it's just this really weird a combination of ridiculously busy, but you can't really do anything with it either. So at first I was like, well, I don't know what to do with this lot. Like it's for sale. I don't want to plant a bunch of stuff. And then if they sell it, we lose all these trees. And then I remembered that they sell these knit fabric pots that are for the nursery industry that allow you to grow trees in the ground and then dig them up after like a few years. And so it just like clicked one day. I was like, oh my God, we could basically create a portable food forest and like grow it out. And like within a couple of years, we'd know whether it's going to continue on or we got to move it. So that's basically what started the whole thing. And then it's just been, you know, beg, borrowing and stealing to get everything together to turn it into something.
Wow. I think that's pretty awesome, man. Big fan of Carl Whitcomb, especially his fabric pots. Folks, if you haven't checked out his work, he was former professor at University of Oklahoma. No, it was Oklahoma State. And, man, he's done some incredible work when it comes to trees and planting and has quite a few inventions out there, too. And those fabric pots are one of them. Fantastic guy. Okay, here's
that's
number four.
That's a pretty cool point, though, is the fabric pots and having a portable food forest. So for those of you that are waiting to like get to your homestead to start farming or orcharding or anything like that, you could do what Eric just mentioned, start growing everything there, practicing and stuff, and then just bring the food forest with you.
That's yeah, cool. I've made that mistake myself, is that I finally wised up when I got to Sacramento and I was like, oh, why am I waiting on, you know, the perfect scenario when I'm actually going to buy fruit trees? So I have probably like 20 fruit trees and berry bushes all in his fabric pots. That these are the ones that are meant to stay above ground. But the great thing about the in-ground ones, particularly if you're growing in quantity, is that you can use the soil that's there. So you don't need to buy in potting mix or anything. And it you can take advantage of the moisture in the ground. So you're not using a ton of extra water. So it's pretty amazing system.
That's cool.
Cool, man. Number four. And I think, I think you're kind of already incorporating a lot of this stuff, Eric. Number four, I had down, you know, organized potlucks and seasonal celebrations. Now that potluck can be a double-edged sword. Yeah, William, I'm sure you remember this one particular lady back in Kansas, just knew she could cook. And it was like, okay, I'm gonna go back to my rap history also. And there was this old thing that said, have you ever gone over a friend's house to eat and the food just wasn't no good? I mean, the macaroni's soggy, the peas all mushed, and the chicken tastes like wood. So, yeah, so that can be a double-edged sword in some of these potlucks, man, where, yeah, there ain't no telling what you're getting into. But honestly, it's really the gathering that – Have you thought about doing any of that, or is there a potluck? Hey, you're in California, so I need to make sure I define what a potluck is, man.
that's a big part of the gathering this Saturday is just getting, instead of trying to get money to buy food or have food vendors, we just opened it up to the community and said, hey, just bring a dish and we're going to have some drinks. And it's also connects to one of the key projects of the permaculture group is the 12-month recipe book. So instead of, you know, what Bill always said, the first thing you should do is mulch all your recipe books, because inevitably they're going to tell you to, you need something that grows out of climate or out of season. So this would be, you know, creating a set of recipes for every month of the year and what's ready to harvest in your area in that month.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So like the potlucks could be, hey, bring in, you know, your dish that maybe you want to submit to the recipe book type of thing.
Oh yeah, man. I think that's a great idea. Number five, create a seed swap or plant exchange. Have you guys done any of that? Cause I know you've met regularly. Have you done that so far?
Yeah. Every meeting we have a return of surplus table. So anyone can bring in anything extra from the garden.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So seeds, plants, anything.
Oh,
that's
man.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's called like a return of surplus table, huh? So anybody just drops whatever they have. Man, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and then like the ultimate would be, you know, once the group's more established, would be to actually have like a hyper-local farmer's market, you know, before the meeting or during the meeting where people can sell, you know, whatever things they make locally.
Man,
I don't know if you're not aware, a lot of times farmers markets are like a outsourced management thing, and they're not necessarily even people from like the town where the farmers market might be. The people who are growing stuff might be driving like 2 to 3 hours away.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if you go up to the Dallas Farmers Market, it's basically a grocery store that's outside. Like all of it, like all the produce all comes from Dole and all that stuff. It's just like HEB outside at the Dallas Farmers Market.
Well, Eric would know that as well. I mean, having, you know, spent time in Dallas as well, but that was what would drive me crazy in Kansas City is that you would show up there. You would have these, it was crazy because you would see these Mennonite and Amish show up. And I'm looking at Dole boxes back there. Like, I'm watching them pull it out of the Dole boxes. I'm like, what's up with this? So, yeah, just because they're Amish doesn't necessarily mean they threw that stuff. Yeah. That everybody assumes, oh, he's out. For all I know, man, it could have been Doug from Off Grid with Doug and Stacy, man. Somebody out there looking like he's Amish. You know, looking like the guy on the Lucky Charms box. I don't know. It could be anybody.
Yeah, I think the Amish might smell a little bit better though.
Oh my goodness. So what about form a tool library and resource co-op? Is that also something you guys do when you meet regularly, or is that
we haven't yet, but that's definitely something that's on the list. Is I mean, basically one of the key things is just making like a resource list for the community, like who skills, tools. You can open it up to like a barter system, like, hey, I need this. Hey, I got that type of thing. So there's any number of things you can start to put together. It's really just having the people and the network together is obviously the first critical point.
Time bank and a barter system. That you kind of covered that just a second ago. That was another thing I had down here. To me, there's things that are far more valuable to me than money. And just a person that would show up on time or actually work or do something, or, you know, that's more valuable to me than in many cases money. A reliable person is always more valuable. How would you incorporate that? And son, feel free to jump in on any of this as well. But has that ever been something that you guys work on? Because I know people are just struggling right now, man, to put bread on the table. But would a time bank be something you guys incorporate?
It's definitely an interesting idea. I mean, we're always about trading services instead of, you know, exchanging money. So a lot of the sponsorships that we're getting for the Food Forest is, fortunately, we have a great advertising opportunity with the lot. So we can get some services like, hey, we'll throw your logo up by the mural. You're going to get like 25,000 people looking at it every day. So that's a lot of what we've been trying to do just to build up this project is working with local businesses and services and saying, hey, we need this done. Well, we can do this for you. So I think, yeah, definitely being flexible with your mindset makes things go a lot smoother for sure.
William, you're going to be at Midwest Preparedness, and they got something there I thought was just – they one of the nights they do like a barter town. No currency.
I'm setting stuff aside right now for that barter town. I'm excited about that barter town, but you can't use fake currency, which is the paper stuff we use right now. You have to like barter something of value. And I'm excited about that. And I even offer, like, whenever I do consultations, I even offer that as an option. Like, I'll take, you know, the fake fiat currency that we use now, but I'll also take like silver, gold, or bartering. There's one guy who watches the channel. He watches Permapasture's Farm too. That's Kenneth Sword. Call him Wu-Tang. But he, every time he comments, he always leaves like the tag SGB because it's silver, gold, and bartering. And yeah, I mean, what am I going to do with the money that I get paid for the consultation? I'm going to typically buy something with it. We could just skip the middleman, skip the taxes part. And then we could just barter directly my services for your services or goods or whatever that might be.
You know, what's bizarre about the U.S. particularly is if you have a formalized barter system, it's taxable.
You know what?
Like, how messed up is that, right? So Bill used to talk about old school bartering services where you'd show up with, let's say, like, you got an extra tractor and you needed, I don't know, like 100 acres of irrigation pipe or something. And so they, within like 2 or 3 moves, they'd be able to find that for you. out in the community.
Wow. That is something. But, you know, that's, I think that's where I think we're going to ultimately find our way back to, is this currency finds its way more and more to being worthless. Things that really matter. I mean, and things that matter to me, like somebody just keeping their word, man. You say you're going to show up at this event or you're going to do something. It's just, I find that far more valuable. I would rather have some broke bum show up with absolutely nothing but a work ethic and his word, and not a, I would rather have that person any day of the week than some, you know, that some person that you just can't rely on. So, it means far more to me. What about vision? You know, I came up with this one, but I don't know how I feel about it, because you start getting too many cooks in the pot, and that's like, you know, visionary circles or, you know, group meetings and stuff like that. And then it always seems to be when you set those things up, they're always, I don't know. I've never had a lot of success with that sort of thing, especially when it comes to a consensus, working in a consensus group. I mean, have you had any luck at all with that, Eric?
Well, my luck is that I don't have any consensus. So that was the first, I've had that experience, and it went sideways rather quickly. But Bill said, you don't have any more than three people deciding on any one thing. And nobody who's not involved in that specific task can tell anyone else how to do that task. You can give your advice, but so basically we have three directors, which means there's never a tie on anything. And if anybody, he's also said, the first thing you need to do is remove the you oughtas and the we shoulds from your group.
Yeah.
You know, you ought to do this. We should do that, which really is you ought to do that, but I'm going to pretend like I'm going to participate in that. So he said, you know, if somebody suggests something, then they immediately have to do it. So you're like, hey, we should start a seed bank. Like, great. Grab two friends and go start it up. You know, we'll give you as much support as we can, but it's pretty much, that's the way we are operating is, this is only going to work if we all participate, and we're only gonna get anything done if we actually get to work and don't sit around talking about it. So,
yeah, that's where I love, I'm all about bartering too, but honestly, the problem that you run into with bartering is that's where, if you have a good means of exchange, I mean, something that all parties find valuable, let's say if it's something like silver, there's a place not far from where I am right now where that's how they do everything. It's got to be done either bartering or silver or gold. I mean, some kind of precious metal or even copper for that matter. It's got to be done in that way. And that's, because let's say I'm looking for blueberries, but, you know, and you're looking for a certain thing. Well, if we can exchange the silver, I mean, it's just a medium of exchange. I mean, it's just a middleman, I guess, for where you might want to go. But yeah, sometimes bartering works out just great.
Real quick on the committee type thing. That's one of the benefits of permaculture, is that if we're all designing or if we're all approaching something with a permaculture mindset, then we're going to naturally kind of be on the same page. Maybe not with specific locations of systems and stuff like that, but we all understand that we're trying to get to an efficient, permanent food source or food system or something like that. So you can kind of, you're all on the same page, but at least with that point of view, when it comes to like a permaculture type community.
Yeah, but that's where, if you don't have people that are on board, like we all speak permaculture, all three of us here, so we could do this. But when you start bringing in other people who have no understanding of what you're talking about or why these things are important to, that everything doesn't happen in isolation. Like somebody says, hey, put the permaculture over there or put our chickens over here. And this, when you start running into that, that's where you got to be speaking the same language. And I think that's got to be foundational, because if they don't know what you're talking about, and in most cases, people that don't have this education don't, it's probably going to be a little bit problematic, I would think. Number nine, I got in here, include kids and elders in activities. Is that even applicable for something that you're working on, Eric? I mean, I'm sure people got kids in California, but, are there activities especially designed for, kids?
I don't know why that was so funny, but, What else would they have? Lizards, I guess.
They just don't identify as kids.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be about your focus, the project, what you need to get done. You know, I mean, like, if anything, if you got older people who can't really do physical labor and you got young kids who need the attention of somebody, then you just put the young kids with the old people and then the able-bodied people can do the work. But, you know, there's always, I think it's just how you design it out. You know, I always make sure there's an education component to any work party. So even if you come there and you can't put the shovel in the ground, you can at least leave with some useful information.
Yeah.
Provide drinks and snacks, and there's always a support system that helps make work much more tolerable.
Well, there is, yeah. California, so some Hooter band is going to show up with some dope. I guarantee that. No, I had to throw that in. The other one I put in, because it is permaculture we're talking about, is, you know, I can't even believe I put this on here, man, because I'm more of the brown permaculture type, not so much the purple type. But I mean, I talk about document and share stories. Every time I find myself in the middle of some permaculture storytelling event, look, I'll be honest with you. The only story I'm going to find entertaining is one told by Dolomite. Outside of that, I don't want to hear this clown talking about, I felt traumatized because I was in fifth grade. I'm like, dude, you're 60 years old. This could get a little bit sideways, man, but what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know you could use videos, social media, bulletin boards, all kinds of stuff, but I mean, clearly you want to document the event. So how do you go about doing that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's helpful if you can have a dedicated person to film, because I almost, as you know, the person running the project, you are always gonna one, not have time or forget to actually take photos and video. So again, that's something that somebody who maybe can't do physical work, they can take photos and video. And so that's, you know, sometimes as valuable as getting the work done. And then, you know, as far as story time goes, it just made me think of, if it seems like we have no culture, it's because we have no local food system. And to me, local food is what creates local culture. And that's largely all the ceremonies and festivals and celebrations all come from the local food seasonal thing. So I think trying to invent or create or borrow culture from other people always seems disingenuous, because you don't have to. All you got to do is create your local food, and it just, I think, would happen naturally that way.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. That's why next time they do another one of these story circles around here with a bunch of these weirdos, I'm going to show up and I'm going to do something straight out of Rudy Ray Moore. I'm going to do a deadpan too. Way down in the jungle deep, a lion stepped on a simplified monkey's feet. The monkey said, okay, I'm going to leave it right there on that one. But yeah, I mean, I like the way you put, I knew you would make piece of confusion of some of that, Eric. So I'm glad you did. Well, that's the 10 I got, man. So once again, bro, why don't we come full circle with this and, you know, tell everybody what you got going on, because there's some that rolled in a little bit late. And obviously the audio portion of this is going to be much greater. And folks, look, I'm not asking you to donate, and I don't myself. I guarantee if Michelle hasn't already done it, before this night is over, I guarantee Permapastures Farm will be donating to this, because honestly, it's not just evangelizing. Eric has done so much for this show and has done so much for us personally as a family.
Yeah.
You know, you name it. I mean, the guy is one of the most selfless people I've ever met in my life. And he's always the last to think about himself. And when he's doing something, I know it's going to be worthwhile. So, Eric, why don't you give everybody the lowdown on this thing again, so they know if they're local, maybe they want to stop by, or maybe somebody's a state away. I mean, it blows my mind every time we do some kind of event. Man, I met people. It blew my mind. A dude came all the way from France to do the last processing, the pig processing. It blew my mind. I was like, dude, where do you think I learned it? From French butchers, man. And you came all the way over here for this? And there's people that have come as far away, I mean, as California, to come out here for classes that we've taught. pretty humbling when you stop to think about it. But man, you know, people listen to this far and wide and all over the place. So give them the lowdown where they can find it and how they can be a part of it.
Yeah. So this Saturday, May 3rd, 6 to 9 p.m. in Fair Oaks, California, which is just outside Sacramento. We're doing a little fundraising gathering for our upcoming community food forest demonstration. And, you know, if you're in the area, come on by. You know someone in the area, send them the link. If you've got extra money, feel free to donate, but really just share it around and use it as an example that say, hey, this can happen. There's no reason we can't do this in our town. I'm working with Jeff Lawton to create a startup kit for permaculture community groups in general. And so, yeah, it's just, that's really the most important thing is to just get this out there, get people excited about it, you know, remove the excuses for why this can't happen. And, you know, it's on us to make it happen. So if you're waiting for it to happen, you're going to be waiting for a long time.
Awesome. Son, anything you want to add?
Yeah, just a reminder to everybody, like you've heard me mention that I've studied under Jeff Lawton and everything. Eric is the reason why. After taking the PDC over in Dallas, the one that he helped teach, he reached out to me and asked if I wanted to go study under Jeff Lawton. I was like, absolutely. So he is the reason that I went and studied under Jeff Lawton. He's an awesome guy. He's the best consultant I've ever heard of. And unlike a lot of consultants out in the United States and other places, he actually has the experience to back it up. And he's been all over the world too. So yeah, any like virtual consultations you want, definitely, definitely go to Eric. You're not going to find a better guy.
Yeah, sure. Eric, regarding that, while we're here, I mean, for people that do want to reach out to you regarding virtual consultations and stuff like that, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, ericsider.com. We can do with the mapping that's available to us through my friend and Jeff's mapper, Ben Missimer. I mean, it's kind of amazing how much you can get from high quality LiDAR maps. And this is really, we're talking about for a mainframe design. Like you're not going to design intricate, you know, food forests and garden systems, but you, if you don't have the mainframe right, you're going to be struggling the whole time. And to William's credit, he's to this day, the only person I've ever sent to Jeff's farm. So
man, I've grown good, don't I, folks? Well, I want to give a serious hat tip, as always, to Renewed Homestead. I want to give a hat tip to my man, Eric Sider. He's humble, doesn't talk much about himself, but, folks, he's one of the sharpest guys out there. So definitely reach out for him if you want a consultation. And, folks, I want to thank everybody for coming in tonight. And please hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody else, look, for all the people out there that are looking to start community and kick things off in your own places, look, this is how it starts. And nobody ever wants to be the first to do any of these things. Nobody ever wants to be out there and put yourself out there because we're always fundamentally thinking we might fail or whatever. Look, if you want to get some stuff kicking, I will use whatever I can on this platform. It's part of why we're here, to promote a lot of these things. That's why I talk about the events. People do not pay me to talk about their events. I talk about it because it's important. It really is. And it's the backbone of doing a lot of this stuff, y'all. So I want to thank everybody for being here. Till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
The knowledge rings. We'll groove that run deep. Wisdom from Saul. Permaculture dream. Let the idea unfold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling nature's food. We got the answer. All we need to do. Listen to the earth. They got us. Watch the world spin from the smallest sprout to the harmony begin in the cycle of life. For the magic's alive.